Hey everyone, this is Achyut Bhava from Nightlight Astrology, and today we are going to talk about three common misconceptions about the sign of Virgo. This is a part of a series that I've been doing talking about three misconceptions that are often associated with each of the 12 signs. We're at Virgo now, which means we're almost at the halfway point of this series. And if you want to look back at all the other videos I've done on the first five signs of the zodiac, you can go back and there's a playlist that includes all the previous episodes. So today it'll be fun to take a look at Virgo. I feel like Virgo is one of the more complicated and often oversimplified signs of the zodiac. Remember that the signs were originally called houses. They were called the houses of the planets or the temples of the planets. Virgo is the temple of Mercury. It is also the exaltation of Mercury. It was called the sign of the Virgin. And so we're going to talk about those meanings today, some of the common misconceptions, and maybe get into some deeper territory with Virgo that can help us clear up those misconceptions. Before we do that, I've got my astronomy program ready to go. I've got a little Liz Green reading for us today, so this should be really fun. In the meantime, I am in promotion. I'm in promotion mode for my upcoming course, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic. I'm going to point you to that on my website right now. If you like learning about astrology and you want a really immersive experience learning ancient Hellenistic astrology with a sort of modern depth psychology twist, then you can check out my new course, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic, under the courses page of my website, nightlightastrology.com. Click on the first year course. You can learn all about it. Lots to learn. It's a really deep dive into houses, signs, planets, aspects, dignities from within the traditional framework. Now, for people who have maybe studied a little bit of astrology from a modern standpoint, you'd be more than ready for this class. If you're brand new, you'd be more than ready for this class. But it is very different to study ancient astrology. The way that they did things from a craft standpoint is really unique. It's really deep and rich. I like to say that learning ancient astrology is like studying a really complicated hermetic mandala. And as you unpack it little piece by little piece, the mandala starts revealing its beauty to you. And you have this living language that starts working inside of you that's philosophical and symbolic. And it changed my practice more than anything. I had been practicing from a modern standpoint for 4 or 5 years, full time. And when I started studying ancient astrology, I felt like my lid was being blown. So I hope that you'll check it out, take a deep dive. If you're someone who likes to work with charts and you're looking for a way of developing a chart practice, this is a great course for you. If you're someone who just wants to develop the language for yourself, I don't know of any better tool than being able to read transits and study your own birth chart. It's like having you have GPS and maps in your phone. You have everything at the tip of your fingers in your phone, but really, you know, having some sense of spiritual guidance for karmic weather. I really honestly don't know what I would do without this in my life day to day, because this alongside of my faith practice are really, you know, my prayer, meditation, taking care of my body. These form the basis of how I make sure that I'm staying centered and healthy. And so it's a great program. I hope you'll check it out. The early bird payment saves you $500 off. There's also a payment plan if you need it. And then we also have need-based tuition assistance. And I really recommend that you check out the need-based tuition. If you're someone who's on a tight budget or you have certain kinds of budgetary restrictions based on your life situation, a lot of people have been hit hard by COVID, whatever the case might be. We do make need-based options available for people. We try to make sure no one's priced out of studying astrology. So check all of that out. If you have any questions, email us info@nightlightastrology.com. All right. Well, thank you guys for letting me promote my upcoming program. Today, like I said, we're going to dive into some of the misconceptions around the sign of Virgo. So here they are, three misconceptions. They're all sort of similar, as you'll find with all the signs. All the stereotypes are sort of just reiterations of some of the same core, misconceptions or stereotypes that people have. So the first one is that Virgos are critical. Oh, Virgos, you're always so judgy or critical or something like that. Oh, Virgos, you're so uptight. You have a hard time being laid back, letting your hair down. It's too much emphasis on maybe control or something like that. And then number three, Virgos are perfectionists. You're just not satisfied unless it's perfect. These are things that I've heard throughout the years over and over again about Virgos. You know, a lot of memes that you'll see people using, which I do laugh at, but also get annoyed by, are you know, pointing towards Virgos as being these perfectionists. So there is a good reason that these stereotypes exist. We're going to talk about why they exist and also what's really at the core of this sign. So I'm going to bring up an astronomy program right now and show you what the sun is doing in the sky around Virgo season. Now, remember, we're using a tropical zodiac, which means the starting and ending points of the signs are based on the equinoxes and solstices and not the literal placement of the constellations. And that's something that's an age-old debate, goes back thousands of years, that astrologers had as to whether the zodiac was inherently mathematical and rooted in the solstices and equinoxes, or if it was inherently something that, although mathematical, was always shifting according to the slow drifting of the constellations relative to the equinoxes and solstices. So those are the sidereal versus tropical zodiacs. We use the tropical zodiac, which means that even though in the sky you're not seeing the constellation of Virgo, where the sun is right now in this picture, you're seeing Leo. This is our starting point of Virgo in our zodiac because it comprises the last 30 days of summer. And we don't care so much with the tropical zodiac if the constellations are aligned with that mathematical portion of the zodiac. They were long, long ago when they started drifting. The tropical zodiac apologists said, look, you know, the constellations aren't what makes this. It's the alternation of light and dark rooted in the solstices and equinoxes that defines the zodiac. So at any rate, we'll set aside that debate for now. I'm saying this just because inevitably when I pull this up, I get people who always ask in the question box, why don't I see Virgo in the constellation? So that's why. All right. Well, here's what you're seeing. This red line here is the celestial equator. I'm just going to draw a little purple line there. And what you're seeing is as the sun enters Virgo, you can see that it's starting to move downward in the sky. This meaning that the daylight is losing power. We're losing minutes of light every day at this time of year. And remember, this is archetypal too. It does not, this is, we're looking at the construction of a symbolic language rooted in one perspective of the sky, but it's an archetypal, ultimately it's an archetypal language that we're not to be taking literally. This is why I, you know, don't waste my time with, you know, the idea that, well, you know, you need to flip the zodiac for people in the Southern Hemisphere. I don't see why you couldn't, but I absolutely don't think it's necessary. So at any rate, so these last 30 days of summer, what do we see? Well, here's the sun coming down in the sky. Watch what happens day after day. The sun is now going to sink down the meridian line. This is at high noon every day, day after day. And as the sun sinks down in the sky, we're moving through Virgo season. Virgo is a double-bodied sign. It's the temple of Mercury, also the exaltation of Mercury. It's the fall of Venus, and it's also the exile of Jupiter. So some interesting things going on there that we'll try to break down a little bit more. But when the sun is coming through this area, what it's doing is it is preparing for the entryway into the underworld. And double-bodied signs like Virgo, the first 15 degrees were said to be associated with the previous fixed sign or solid sign behind it, in this case, Leo. And the last 15 degrees of the sign, every sign has 30 degrees. The last 15 degrees were associated with the cardinal or tropical sign in front of it, in this case, Libra. And so a double-bodied means it participates of two natures simultaneously. That's because these signs come during key transition points relative to the equinoxes and solstices. So what you're seeing here, when the sun is declining downward toward this place, is the preparation for the takeover of darkness in the year. In the ideal mathematical alternation of light and dark of the solar year, when the sun goes below this threshold all the way up until the end of Pisces, there will be more darkness than there is light in the 24-hour period, which means that Virgo is a sign that represents the handover of light to darkness within the great solar round. As that handover is happening, you have a Mercury-ruled sign, just as you do in Gemini when there's a transition happening from the growing of light on the light half of year into the declining of light in the light half of year. So both Mercury signs refer to double-bodied signs, Gemini and Virgo, within which the transition from some form of light dominance changes into the beginning of light waning or the total takeover of darkness at the fall equinox. So Mercury is a naturally deconstructive sign. It's a sign that tends to take things apart or throw things into question. Mercury is that kind of part of the mind, the analytical part that can break things apart. And then Jupiter ruled signs like Sagittarius and Pisces, which come during the times of year where the transition from darkness into light is being made, such as Sagittarius into Capricorn or Pisces into Aries, where the light is slowly returning at the winter solstice, or the spring equinox when the light takes over again for the next half of the year. Those are Jupiter ruled signs where constructiveness is being built back out. So you have order and chaos, both as divine archetypal principles and opposites working together in a kind of dance in the yearly round. Well, what's happening during the sign of Virgo is you see the light is starting to decline below this line. So Virgo represents the transition from the light of the year into the darkness of the year. And this also happens as the sun is entering the metaphorical underworld. Remember, when the sun hits the sign of Libra, it is traditionally called autumn or fall. And the sun in the sign of Libra was said to be in its fall. So the sun in Virgo is preparing for the descent into the underworld and marks the transition of the descent into the underworld. That's everything you need to know, in a sense, about Virgo to understand its archetypal essence. Here's a few things that can be said right away. What does it mean, really, to prepare for a descent into the underworld? And what does this have to do with potentially being critical or uptight or a perfectionist or something like this? Remember that even in sort of agricultural, almost like a rural agricultural framework, this is the time of year where farmers, for example, are preparing for harvest. So the Virgin as a sign has been depicted over time as a young maiden, the harvest, sometimes called the harvest maiden. And she sits sometimes with angel wings in a field with, some wheat, or oftentimes she'll sit with a bird on her shoulder. So the harvest maiden with the basket of wheat or something like that. These all have to do with the idea of youthful innocence, as well as the end of youthful innocence with the approaching of the sun's entrance into the underworld, with the descent of light into darkness, and with the approaching judgment that is implied by the harvest. What happens at the harvest in a very mundane way? The fruits of your labor are judged, are counted. What you have sown, you will reap what you have sown. And so Virgo carries with it this inherent sense of the impending or approaching judgment of the fall and the harvesting moment. Now, that's not just a physical moment, although it can be. For example, when we say that a Virgo is critical or uptight or a perfectionist, essentially what we're saying underneath all three of these misconceptions is that a Virgo has a more acute awareness of the fact that things will be counted or measured or judged or evaluated in the future. They're a part of that sense of the growing change from light to dark. And one of the things that's implied by the change of light to dark is judgment, as in the scales of Libra that come next, which is one of the two signs that Virgo participates in by virtue of being a double-bodied sign. So the scales of Libra, the balance, this is a sign of judgment and evaluation. You weigh things on a scale to find out, how much something is worth or how much you've gained. And so Virgo has this built-in sense that, look, there is a judgment coming. Now, that judgment can be very mundane in the sense of, like, I have to make sure that I do a good job because my results will be judged and evaluated. I need to do a good job because my results will, potentially feed me or other people through the lean months, through the winter. I have to do a good job because there is some sense of moral or spiritual judgment that's coming in the afterlife. So any of these levels, whether it's more physical or moral or societal or spiritual, the sense of impending or approaching evaluation, decision, judgment, the potential for criticism, the potential that your work will translate into some kind of consequence, those are all a part of what is implied by the solar light sinking into the underworld and by the sense of the loss of light. Now, the other thing, of course, is that we have a very, you know, paradoxical image, which we'll talk about when we talk about the misconceptions of Libra in the underworld. Say, for example, in the Egyptian image of the Hall of Mut, where there's a heart being weighed against a feather on the scales, determining the soul's destination in the afterlife. Well, again, how could a heart ever literally be heavier than a feather, you know, or lighter than a feather? A heart cannot, by definition, be lighter than a feather, you know. You'd have to have the world's biggest, you know, bird ever, you know, for a feather to outweigh a heart. So the idea here is that the judgment implied goes beyond material judgment, that the judgment of the underworld goes beyond the material dimension of things, the intention of the heart, the deeds or actions of the heart, the remorse or sense of the need for forgiveness or, you know, compassion that the heart has shown. Excuse me. So the way that the heart is evaluated is it's not a linear, rational, empirical mode. And remember, this is a sign, this is the sign where Mercury is both exalted, and also this is the sign of Mercury's rulership. So sometimes what's happening in the sign of Virgo is there's a lesson being learned about different levels at which we evaluate or judge things, or different levels at which we understand something to be helpful or useful or pure or good. You know, for example, there's, you know, the oldest lesson in the book with kids is, oh, I didn't win, or I didn't get an A. Yeah, but you gave it your best shot. You really put your heart into it. You know, you really tried hard. And that's the message that parents will give to kids when the child really invests themselves in something, but doesn't get the superficial result that they're hoping for. And what you're trying to emphasize to them, well, it's the inner transformation that you made along the way of really giving your heart to something, really putting your heart into it and making a real effort. So sometimes it's that kind of dichotomy that we're getting at, that a Virgo energy in general can struggle with. The Virgo archetype can point to a struggle with this very tendency to look at more superficial levels of evaluation or criticism or judgment. This is why sometimes we say Virgos are perfectionists or uptight or critical. It's in these kind of stereotypes. What we're getting at is the idea that a Virgo sometimes doesn't know how to judge or evaluate what's at the heart of a matter versus something more superficial. For example, you know, I've sometimes joked that, you know, Virgos will get a PhD in minor things, you know, and like, whereas, you know, maybe it might be better to get a bachelor's degree in a major thing, you know. It's like, and that's of course just a joke, but the idea being that, you know, if we focus on the little things that are wrong or off, and we miss the pure intention, the good-heartedness, the desire to try to help, that, or to be helpful or useful, then, you know, then it certainly we can fall into the trap of being a perfectionist or uptight or critical, when really the essence of the sign is about being careful morally, being careful spiritually, being careful physically, knowing that evaluation is coming, knowing that consequences come from our actions, knowing that all of that eventually things are judged and evaluated, and that determines the outcomes and future trajectory. But there's also the lesson of grace that's sort of there in the sign. For example, you know, when you think about, again, I just think, for example, let's just say you have like an 18-year-old valedictorian, and they've just always gotten straight A's, and they've always been a perfectionist, you know, and then they go to school, and maybe they're asked, rather than just getting good grades and doing what's required of them, they're asked to think for themselves. And suddenly they feel paralyzed, and they stay up all night, and they're, you know, they're just, their body's getting ravaged because they're stressing out so hardcore because they don't know how to get it right in a situation where what's really required is to do something from the heart and from, you know, what is your own mind tell you? Where are you going to take this? And what's your own voice here? What's your own stake in the matter? Another dichotomy that can come up is well, I'll just read you. This is from Liz Green's Astrology of Fate. And sometimes you'll get this other, remember that Virgo is also what's called the fall of Venus. And the fall of Venus is pointing to, and remember the opposite sign, Pisces is the place with the fall of Mercury, whereas it's the exaltation of Venus. So the places that Mercury is exalted, Venus is depressed. And the place that, Venus is exalted, Mercury is depressed. So there's this built-in tension between the sensual dimension of Venus and the kind of fluid, graceful, harmonizing principle of Venus and the more mental, rational qualities of Mercury. So Virgos are also dealing with that, you could say, when it comes to making decisions and evaluations. How do you make sure that you're not only doing something right, but that it's enjoyable, that you're not just getting it right, or that you're not just overly concerned about judgment, but that there's a kind of fluidity and grace and beauty along the way. So sometimes the uptight thing comes from the tension between Mercury and Venus in this sign, if that makes sense. Anyway, listen to what Liz Green writes. I love this. Complex indeed, Virgo seems to embody a deep paradox, a combination of upright and almost school marmish Astraea set side by side with the orgiastic lunar harlot goddesses of Asia Minor. This paradox poses an enormous conflict for Virgo, and is out of the conflict that Virgo's pattern of development arises. Whether this is enacted as a collision between personal and professional life, between marriage and independence, a common theme, between spirituality and materialism, between morality and abandonment, Virgo struggles with these opposites throughout life, trying to encompass them both. Often, the Virgoan individual will try to embody one while sacrificing the other, and this generally provokes difficulties, for the fate of the sign does not permit such splitting. I feel that Persephone, as we meet her in the myth, embodies only one half of Virgo's paradox. She has elected to remain virgin rather than the harlot, and her secret unlived side, represented by Gaia or Aphrodite in the story, there's Venus, leads inevitably to her abduction and her enforced marriage to the Lord of the Dead. That's Hades, Pluto, the underworld. Remember Virgo heading toward the underworld. The word virgin, like the sign, is complex. These days, we are prone to understand it as referring to sexual intactness and inexperience, but this is far from the original sense of the word. Our astrological Virgo in her mythic context is scarcely a virgin. One need only look at figures like the Black Artemis of Ephesus with her 100 breasts, at whose behest every young woman spent a night in the temple prostituting herself to a stranger as an offering to the goddess before marriage, in order to find a contradiction to our 20th century interpretation. Yet Artemis called virgin. As John Layard in his essay on the virgin archetype writes, in the first place, though we now think of the word virgin as being synonymous with chaste, this was not the case either with the Greek word parthenos or with the Hebrew Alma, of which virgin is the most usual biblical translation. For the Greek word was used of an unmarried girl, whether she was chaste or not, and was, in fact, also applied to unmarried mothers. The Hebrew word means likewise unmarried without reference to premarital chastity. This leads us inevitably to the problematic image of the whore. For the ancient virgin goddess such as Atargatis and the Ephesian Artemis were themselves harlots, and their temples were served by prostitutes who embodied the deity and bestowed her divine favors upon devout men, thus raising them also to semi-divine status. In this sense, the prostitute is the same as the mythic virgin, for she's an archetypal image of the free woman who is wedded first of all to her inner being and only secondarily to a man. So I love that passage, but one of the things that I love the most about it, I mean, I love everything about it. It's a great piece from Liz Green. And this, by the way, comes from her book, The Astrology of Fate, in case you're interested in picking it up. There's a section of that book called The Myths of the Zodiac that I really love. But again, what are we talking about? We're talking about the split between the rational and the sensual, or between the moral and the spirit, the moral and the sensual. We're talking about the, like, I got to get it right because I'm being evaluated, but also I have to make sure that it's more than just evaluation, criticism, and judgment from outside, that I'm doing something from my center. There's a big difference, right? If I'm doing something, if I'm dressing in a certain way, if I'm getting grades in a certain way, if I'm putting my life together in a certain way to make other people happy or satisfied, and that's what I'm worried about, then I've lost touch. I've in a sense, quote unquote, whored myself out, right? But if I have, if I am in touch with my innermost being and I'm trying to get good grades, but I'm doing it from the space of my something that's integral to me. There's something of my own selfhood, of my own embodied soulfulness in what I'm doing. Then there's a marriage between the concern about exterior values and judgments and consequences and the actual intentionality and sort of ripeness of my own inner life. So sometimes those two things are trying to get on the same page for the Virgo energy, and that's not always easy to do. It's like, you know, knowing at 18 years old that like the SAT score really matters, but also trying to remember that, you know, your heart and soul at the end of the day are not weighed by your SAT score. How do you keep those things in some, there's a tension between those two realities that Virgo is kind of like working with. Similarly, when it comes to anything sensual or sexual, there's often a feeling of needing to be whole and complete and to myself. And sometimes that will be confused for purity or chastity, when actually it has more to do with, you know, less with who I sleep with or, you know, what I do or don't do in any sensual or sexual sense, and more about the integrity of my own inner being and feeling whole and complete unto myself in how I relate to others sexually or romantically or whatever the case may be. You can be married and be a virgin even. There's a lot of there's a pretty deep split. So like sometimes you'll see, for example, I can't tell you how many times I have seen people with strong women with strong Virgo energy who may have dealt with, say, an eating disorder when they were younger, where they were trying to like chisel their body image into the shape that they thought other people wanted, and just malnourishing themselves, you know, what's the word, like masochistic on the inside, you know. And then later in life, they had to learn, I can take care of myself and look good, but also be good to myself. And so there's a different approach that comes. It's not that they end up, let's say, just, you know, like gaining a ton of weight and not caring about, you know, what they look like. It's more like, well, I can look good, but also I can feel good and I can treat myself well in how I look good or how I take care of myself. So that's a big adjustment that sometimes has to be made. I've seen that more times than I could count with clients with Virgo energy. Similarly, if I had to put into a category, people who have worked in some form of I don't know what it's called, the sex industry, I guess, but like, well, I don't know what the sex industry is or how it's defined, but exotic dancers, for example, can't tell you how many people I've seen that work as tantric healers or, you know, dancers at some point, or strippers or whatever the case might be. And one of the things that, you know, again, strong Virgo energy. And one of the things that sort of seems to be at the core of that expression in a birth chart will be that I am not, like, there's a sense of like needing to feel like I'm intact, I'm whole, I'm complete. And I also like to dance and be embodied in this way that pushes boundaries, or that almost challenges the image that I have of myself, that I'm only good unless I'm sort of pure. So there's sometimes this need to like challenge like a puritanical self-image around sensuality or sexuality, and to know that I'm whole, I'm good, I'm pure, and I have this really exotic sensual dimension. And so sometimes the dichotomy between like the sensual and like the pure, you know, and the material and the spiritual, those things have to have this back and forth. And so sometimes you'll see these, sometimes it's like splitting too, where you'll see someone who really struggles with that. They'll be like, you know, I always joke around where I'm like, it's like the kind of uptight looking librarian by day, pole dancer by night, you know. It's like that split or whatever is like kind of the part of what's being worked out. So when we say uptight, critical, perfectionist, we have to know where those stereotypes come from and what the underlying essence of the sign is all about. When you're talking about the virgin that's on the brink of the entryway into the underworld, you're talking about youth and innocence and initiation into adult life, into mysteries, into sexuality. How do we remain whole and complete unto ourselves while also going through life? And remember, what does life do? Like Pluto in the story of, you know, Persephone, for example, or Hades in the underworld. Like, there's a way in which life violates us. There's a way in which life takes from us our sense of completeness, in integral wholeness. It takes away the sense that we're pure morally. Eventually, we all become hypocrites, or we all fail, or we all... And yet somehow through those initiations, we have to come to learn a deeper sense of what it means to be whole, complete, beautiful, sanctified beings. And in doing so, our way of evaluating, our way of judging has to change as grace, mercy, tolerance, compassion, patience come in. Does that mean suddenly we have no standards, that we're not critical, thoughtful, careful, anxious about results, that we don't walk with a kind of sacred anxiety or tension through life, that we aren't careful to make sure that we're in integrity, that we aren't careful to make sure that what we're doing is useful or helpful to others, that there isn't a standard of purity in our lives, morally, spiritually, physically, sexually? No, of course, we're always working on those things. But there's also this kind of remember that part of what purity really means and how purity is really maintained. It's like an inner fire that we discover has always been burning and will always be burning. And we often can't discover that until we walk into darkness somehow, until we're sort of abducted or taken or violated in some ways outside of our ability to control. Until you fail the SAT, even though you were the valedictorian and stayed up all, you know, nights. I guess you should study before, but you stay up all night studying and you still fail no matter what. You're the most diligent person in the classroom and you fail, but the person who does half cares and doesn't study somehow gets a better grade. That's life, you know? So remember these things when we talk about Virgo. Remember the dichotomies between Venus and Mercury, the mind and the sensual body. Remember the transition between wholeness and completeness unto oneself and being taken by someone or something else. We can always still remain whole and complete unto ourselves, even when parts of us are taken through mistakes or other people or forces in nature that go against our will or outcomes that we can't control. So this is such an interesting sign. I love the idea too that, you know, this is a sign that also really points to the youthfulness, the eternal, youthful, undying spirit within all of us, that sometimes in, you know, the archetypal tradition is sometimes referred to as the anima, also like a guiding principle of spirit that keeps us whole and somehow complete unto ourselves. It's like something that's always calling us along the path. And, you know, like a young person, you know, in a dream that's somewhere up ahead on the trail calling us, and they have little wings and they're almost hovering off the ground, and there's something innocent and pure. And so we follow that voice inside, that innocent voice that says, hey, try this, go this way. Remember, one of the interesting things about Virgo is that it exists in an antitia with Aries, and both Aries and Virgo were associated with young people. Aries originally the hired, the hired man, but this would have been like a 20 year old boy who was like unattached and uncommitted and able to be hired for war or service or work. So both Virgo and Aries have this kind of secret union between the two signs through antitia, and they both love freedom, actually. And so another part of the dichotomy is understanding what it means to be free and whole and complete unto oneself, while also being, you know, beholden to standards in the world. You have to be useful. You have to be helpful. You have to get it right. You have to know that there are judgments and consequences out there. How do you care about them while also remaining free and complete unto yourself? So, you know, if we know that these are the tensions, how complicated, how beautiful. And if we know that this is what people are dealing with, how much more compassion and patience can we have with people? And how devastating is it to boil a, you know, Virgo down to saying, oh, you're just a fussy critical perfectionist? It's like, well, you know, that's not helping anything. You know what I mean? So, and we all are dealing, all of the archetypes are archetypes of life itself. Some archetypes, perhaps we're a little bit more oriented toward than others, but we all have this kind of struggle of the virgin entering the underworld and all of the sense of impending judgment that we all deal with, and how to walk through life gracefully and freely and with a sense of being whole, complete, with enjoyment and pleasure and grace, while also having this kind of sacred anxiety. Every footstep matters, every choice and thought matters, creates karma, creates consequences. That's a lot to live with. So at any rate, I hope this was useful for all of you today. So sorry if I got a little rambly with this one. I feel like sometimes I still feel today like I'm always learning more about how to articulate or talk about the sign of Virgo, but I hope that these thoughts contribute toward a better understanding for you and your own chart or Virgos in your life that you know. If you have any comments you'd like to leave, feel free in the comment section to share what you know or what you've experienced about the sign of Virgo. If I've had to actually delete a few comments that have been like just being really mean and, you know, stereotyping and being jerky. So leave constructive comments, please. But share what you think about Virgo, what you've noticed, what you've dealt with yourself. Love to hear your thoughts as always. And we'll keep going with this series. Probably next week, we'll get back into this series by taking a look at misconceptions about the sign of Libra, which we'll pick up on some similar themes, actually. Remember that Virgo shares in the nature of Libra a little bit. So don't forget to check out my new course, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic. If you like this kind of stuff, we spend about 9 hours going through the Zodiac in my class through one of the units on the Zodiac. We break it down in a lot more detail through all 12 signs. There's a lot there to learn. So I'd love to see some of you in class soon. Check it out on my website, nightlightastrology.com, and we'll see you again tomorrow. Bye, everyone.